Okay, shall we get started? It's a nice and loud microphone today, so. Good, so third appointment with learning and data, and you may be pleased or you may not be pleased to learn that from this week we start balancing off with algorithms. So the first 2 weeks were overloaded, front-loaded with algorithms and data structures because you're going to get the coursework out sooner. And now we're going to catch up a little bit. So Friday will be another learning lecture, I think. Okay, so today we're going to start exploring something closer to the heart of machine learning today. Well, I guess recommender systems are also close to the heart of machine learning, but this is more close to the heart of statistical machine learning in some sense. So we're going to look at clustering. We're going to look at one specific algorithm for clustering, which is called the k-means algorithm. And we will look at it also with a slightly modified point of view in terms of introducing the concept of an error function that gets minimized during the process of learning. And that's a fairly general principle, the principle of an error function that will apply across a large number of different learning algorithms. Okay, so that is an attempt at a definition of the task at hand, clustering. Okay, so as the name says, we hope to find clusters, which are groups of data points that exhibit some homogeneous characteristics. And importantly, the notion of cluster is not just, although we say it's a partition of data set into meaningful set, meaningful is what is crucial. So in order for a partition to be meaningful, we somewhat expect that where we draw the boundary between one cluster and the other cluster, there is some less density of data points in some sense. And another fundamental aspect is that we will do this based on distances between data points. Okay, so we've introduced the concept of distance at some length in the first two lectures. You probably knew all about it already, but we've reintroduced it for your convenience. And we are going to try to cluster numerical vectors. So we're going to look at vectors of numerical data based on the distances between these vectors. Another thing that is important, now, there are different classes of learning algorithms. A broad distinction is between unsupervised, supervised, and then you may have maybe reinforcement or active learning, if you wish. The main difference in this course, what is relevant is supervised and unsupervised learning. You could, broadly speaking, say that unsupervised learning is just finding patterns in data. So finding out something about the distribution of the data without having access to any more information than the position of the data points. The aim of supervised learning, instead, is learning a map. Your data consists of pairs of inputs and outputs, and you want to learn a map between inputs and outputs based on instances, in which case the supervision consists in having the outputs for what is called the training data. Next lecture, we will start looking at classification, which is an example of supervised learning. But today we look at clustering, which is unsupervised. And unsupervised learning is a hot topic these days, because supervision is very expensive. So, you know, if you want to make meaningful partitions of web pages, you don't want to have a human that goes and labels every web page as, you know, junk or not. You want to be able to do it automatically. Okay, so maybe it's obvious, but maybe it's a worthwhile exercise to try to figure out why we want to do something every time we try to do something. Now, why cluster? Okay, first answer that gets no points is because I've got to teach a lecture on clustering, so you get it. Any more answers from the audience? Why would we want to cluster data?
To abstract the data.
Oh, what does that mean?
I mean,
to abstract the data was the answer, and the question was, what does that mean?
To decrease the amount of, for example, elements we're working on. Now we can work on the groups, because we have, for example, 100 elements, but now we have 20 groups.
Right. So that's an excellent point. We want to instead, and that's actually the second point. I was expecting someone else to come up, or maybe someone, the same person, to come up with a simpler, you know, more practical, maybe, reason on why we may want to cluster. Yeah. So for interpretation. So, for example, in the field where I work in, which is called bioinformatics, we are very interested often in finding out patterns in data. You know, you have a process where you don't know much, and you want to extract some patterns. So, a big splash in bioinformatics in the late 90s really was the first time they did this magic technique called microarrays, where you measure the gene expression of all genes on patients with leukemia, so leukemia samples. There are at least two types, myeloid leukemia and lymphoma leukemia, which are different, have got different cures, different prognosis. And it's important to be able to distinguish between them. And typically, it's a difficult task that requires an expert clinician to determine from symptoms whether it's one type or the other. And this big splash was that by just measuring gene expression, you could find a reasonably nice pattern in the data that said, actually, there are two groups. And lo and behold, the two groups mapped onto the two different prognoses. So actually, finding patterns in data can be very informative. In that case, you didn't need to abstract so much because you only had 40 data points. There were other problems. So interpreting data, that was the first thing I was pointing at. And this leukemia example is a great one to understand why sometimes, particularly when you are in a more exploratory situation, there may be surprises in the data. And just doing a clustering as the first thing when you're given a data set is a useful thing often to come up with hypotheses. But then the other one, compressing data, is a great one. So if I have lots and lots of data, then I may run into issues of storage of all these data. And if I find out that actually all this data is fairly redundant because, you know, there is just a little bit of noise on top of 3 or 5 or 100 fixed patterns, and I just, you know, store those. So I compress my data in a very significant manner. That often is called vector quantization. For, I guess, it sounded cool, and they had to pick a name. But it's clustering, you know. They call it vector quantization, but it's clustering. Okay, so let's look at an example, and this example is designed to kind of point you towards some of the actual difficulties in clustering. Okay, so you've got a data set of 20 points in two dimensions. Okay, that's not a very big problem. What structure does this data set have? Okay, we're exploiting our faculty as humans of being able to see things in two dimensions and actually pretty much beat everything else at pattern recognition in two dimensions. What's the structure in this data set? Okay, it's a lecture about clustering. So there are clusters is an admitted answer. Right, you can see 5 clusters. Well, okay, I could say that you know, there is one cluster here, maybe one here and one here. I could say there are 3 clusters. That makes sense as well, in some sense. It's a difficult issue. You know, I could just say there are 2 clusters and partition it like this. There is quite a nice separation here. There may be some additional structure, but less well-pronounced. Or I could say there are 3 clusters and then pick up this one. Incidentally, the 2-cluster solution of telling me there's this one and then all the other ones are there would also have been probably an admissible clustering solution that we would have got to by some different initialization.
How many data points do you need to call the data cluster?
Ah, that's an excellent question. 20 clusters. They're all separated. It's a good point. Yeah, that's you know, that's entirely a non-trivial point. When you start going in data that lives in 100 dimensions, how many clusters do we have? You know, what is a cluster? It's non-trivial. It is a non-trivial question. And, you know, there is actually some reasonably advanced machine learning stuff that people would do these days in terms to try to come up with some criteria for deciding this selection. It is called a model selection problem, okay? Because when we decide how many clusters we have, 2, 3, 4, or 5, we're essentially superimposing a priori a view of the world on our data. And how do we select which one is the best? It's a good question.
And can we treat one point as one cluster?
Can we treat one point? Well, if I said we have 20 points, 20 clusters, we would have, you know, probably, since we're not going to split points amongst clusters, we would have 20 clusters of a single point. But certainly, yeah, that's the case. I mean, if we start, if we had, you know, if I started going on and said I want 6 clusters, and I don't think we have the slide for that, but then probably this one would become a cluster on its own, okay, based on the distances between the points. So that's an excellent, you know, question that leads you to thinking about the problems of clustering. But in some situations, and what we will look at today, K is fixed, okay? And K is the number of clusters, usually, for, you know, the dysgraphic ones that spell clusters with a K, like myself. And that is a piece of data. So we start supposing that, you know, we have, we know that there are two types of leukemia, but we haven't got a clinician to classify these patients. We just cluster them and find out that there are two clusters. What are the two optimal clusters? But it is a very tricky point. I mean, what level of granularity you want in your data analysis? It's not a trivial question to answer. Okay, but basically, you know, these are kind of introductory slides about the concept of clustering. And of course, in this case, yeah?
So, isn't it more important to depend on the data itself?
We'll get back to that question towards the end of the lecture when we talk about error functions. And but that's, you know, what I'm saying is that that is not an insurmountable problem. There are ways of approaching it, and, you know, model selection is an active problem. What I'm saying is that it's a non-trivial problem, okay? And, you know, and it's also the case that, you know, your a priori knowledge might say there should be 2 clusters or 5 clusters, and actually you would find that 4 are more appropriate. And that's another kind of a model selection case. So the big splash in the leukemia paper that I was mentioning before was that there were 2 clusters and also that they mapped to that. It's not at all obvious that, you know, the molecular level data would have borne out the fact that there is a clinical prognosis difference between the two types. Now, intimately related with the question of how many clusters we have is the notion of how to choose how to cluster points. Okay, so one way that I could do is the so-called hierarchical clustering, which is essentially it's some sort of agglomerating clusters all together. So we start with individual, we start with 20 clusters, one per point. And then we start saying which one of the two points are most similar, in this case in the sense of distance, and we join them. Then we form a cluster, and we iteratively form more clusters, and then we get a tree. So in the example we had before, or in a simpler example, in a simpler example, suppose we had, you know, just three points. We could start building a tree by placing three markers here. Then we find which ones are the closest. We join them, and the height of the branch connecting them, we use it to be the same as the distance of that. And then we join this with this. How do we join them? We replace them with a point placed in between them, in the spatial mean. And then we look at the distance between this point and that, which is about this much. So we come up with an algorithm that builds a tree. There are also algorithms for visualizing the tree. Of course, it's not entirely obvious what's the best way in terms that you can permute data and so on. And then once we have this visual inspection, in this case, it would be trivial to say, well, we cut the tree here and we come up with two clusters. So in the more complicated example of the previous figure, we would have a tree with, you know, 20 leaves, and then we start building up the tree, and at a certain point we find that some of the branches become very long and we cut it. And that's, by the way, a perfectly valuable choice of number of clusters. So it gives you a handle on how to choose the number of clusters. As I said, it is agglomerative, and the reason we use this word agglomerative, which I guess is not a very common word in the English language, does there exist a word called agglomerate? Native speakers? No, I don't think it exists. Sorry? What?
Conglomerate.
Ah, but what does that mean?
Conglomerate,
what is conglomerate? I thought it was kind of cement.
Okay.
Yeah? Yeah, so it's, I guess it is something similar in principle. But what it means, it comes from a Latin word that means to merge things, okay? So agglomerative means that it merges data points and then forms, you know, a virtual data point by putting a data point in between, and then, you know, once you joined all of these, it will put a virtual data point there. So it merges or agglomerate, if you want to say, the various points into a single point. The other type of clustering, which is what we're going to, in some sense, that is a very good clustering algorithm. In other senses, it is not so good, and we'll see why it is not so good. The other type of clustering that we're going to look at today is partitional clustering, okay, which basically says, you tell me a priori how many clusters you want, and I give you the best with respect to some criterion. Specifically, we look at the k-means. So k, throughout the lecture, represents the number of clusters, so the fixed parameter of the model. Okay. So the problem of k-means clustering is, as the name says, you have k clusters, you have n data points which live in d dimensions, and you want to partition them into k groups according to some distance-based criterion. And the algorithm, k-means clustering, is an iterative algorithm that is also known by other names, and works on the principle, essentially, of the abstraction that was mentioned before, or the vector quantization, or the data summarization. So essentially, what it does, it proposes candidate positions for the centers of the clusters. So it comes up with k vectors, which are the candidate centers, and then iteratively updates them to find the optimal position of these centers in terms of minimizing some distance. And we shall use, of course, throughout Euclidean distance, although this is not necessary for what I'm going to say. You can just change your line of code and it will work the same. Okay, how does it work? And maybe it's useful to produce another figure. Now, suppose we have a few more points. Well, you have to, let's say we have k equals 2, and you have to initialize your cluster centers. And that's a whole issue. And then what you would do is you iteratively assign some data points to that cluster and move the cluster centers. So in this case, what you first do, you compute the distance of the center from each data vector. and then you assign data vectors to a cluster based on, to a center, based on which center is the closest. So in this case, I would probably assign this point, this point, this point, and I'm not sure about this point. Let's say I assign that point to the other one. Okay, so this is the assignment step. Once you have assigned a step, you say, well, this is not really a great position for the center of the cluster made up of these three points. Let's move it to the center of these points. So you move it here. And similarly, this one is not a great position. You move it probably somewhere here. And at this stage, these two points become closer to this. You reassign, you remove your centers. And after that, you would see that in this case, it stops updating. Okay? So I'll go through the slides. I also have a MATLAB file, and I'm really proud I found out how to change the fonts in MATLAB, so people won't have to come to the first to the front row. But this is kind of, you know, a slide example. So we start, you know, this would be kind of an ideal clustering in the case of two clusters. But again, as I said, the choice of the number of clusters is arbitrary. So if I try to fix five clusters onto that data set, I would end up perhaps with something like that. Okay, so let's swap onto MATLAB and see how it works, okay? Now, you can only do it from, see, the thing that got me the other time, you can only do it from the command window. You can't do it. So you do preferences, and this is so important, I thought I'd have to show. There's preferences, fonts, and then we can make it 18. And now everyone can read? Ah, well, I've achieved something in this week. Okay, so what I've got here, I've got the first line, I just generate some data, okay? Let's execute these. Okay, and I plot it on a figure. It is data from two clusters. It doesn't look very clustered, but I made it a cluster. Notice that I have a parameter here. And the way I generate it here, that vector is the vector which is between the two centers of the cluster. So in particular, here I would have a center generated here and a center generated somewhere here. But things don't always pan out as clear cut. So if I did, for example, if I change that, then everyone is agreeing that those are two clusters. But there were two clusters in the previous one, the way I generated it as well. Then, let me go back. Then the third line, I initialize the centers. And at this moment, I'm initializing them actually in a pretty good way. Maybe it's too good because I'm initializing them to the truth. So let's say I initialize one at 1, 1, and the other one at 2, 3, okay? So let's execute these lines as well. Okay, so there you go. So I've plotted the data as they were before, or similar. Every time I generate random data, so it's not necessarily the same. And I've put one center here and one center there. Okay. Now, what do I have to do? Okay, I have to do some sort of initial assignment. So I've got a little script. You can see here it's called dist compute. And let's say I do distances. Centers to data. Okay, so if I do this, and put it in here, okay, I have to do something slightly different. What does it say? Okay, I'll do it twice. Distance is 1. So I compute the distances from the first center first. And it outputs a vector of 40 distances. And then I compute the distances from the second center, which I call with another variable. Okay. So at this stage, I've done the initial computation of the distances. So what I need to do now is to compute a vector of assignments. And how do I do that? So the way I'm going to do it, I'm not going to be extremely interactive here, but please interrupt me, because if we are very interactive and coded together, then it may take a little bit of time. The way that I'm going to do it is, I've got my data, which is 40 two-dimensional vectors. Now, I've got two clusters. I'm going to define a matrix, number of points times number of clusters, which I'll call kind of membership. Where I put zeros or ones. So each row will sum to 1 because you have to be in one cluster. And they can all either be 0 or 1. So if you're in one cluster, you're not in the other clusters. So let's define membership matrix. Let's start initializing it as zeros. Let's say NPT, number of points equals. OK, I'm just telling it how many points there are. So I could define another variable. If I were to code this for being used in general, I would, instead of fixing 2, I would say find the number of clusters as the first dimension of that centers. But let's not worry about that. And then I have a string of distances. And let's do the simplest possible thing. Let's do a horrible for loop. So let's code it in the simplest possible way. So sine equals, I think there is this function, sine dist equals sine Okay, so what I'm doing, I'm looking at the distances, and I'm doing the obvious thing. So I'm taking the distance from the first cluster center, subtracting the distance from the second cluster center. So if it is smaller than 0, then I have to assign to the first cluster center. The difference is smaller than 0, means I'm closer to the first cluster center. Otherwise, I'll assign it to 1. To the other one. So let me just check that. Yes. Let me just check that it does what it says on the tin. Yeah, good, it just extracts the sign. Because sometimes you can find unpleasant surprises if you just trust functions to be named in a sensible way. Okay, so I've come up with basically minus 1 or 1. And then I have to say, I go through the various rows of this membership matrix, and I assign, if it is minus 1, I put a 1 on the other column. And if it is plus 1, I'll just put a 1 on the right-hand column. Okay, so we could probably do it in a clever way, but let's do it. Okay, so I've coded in a for loop where I go through, for each data point, I compute the difference in distance from the first center minus the difference in distance from the first center and from the second center. If that is negative, I'm closest to the first center. So I put a 1 in the first column. If that is positive, I'm closest to the second center. And then I put a 1 in the second column. And going through this, let's execute this. Okay, because I didn't define it. So where is it defined? See, that's a problem. Okay. As you see, in reality, the way I've generated it, the top 20 points should be in the first cluster. And if you see, in fact, the way I've initialized the clusters, the first cluster center is closer to the true first cluster center, so it does get most of the first ones, well, all of the first ones in the first cluster. But then the way I initialized it means that, you know, there are some of the cluster in the, say, right-hand corner that is closest to the first than to the second initialized center. Okay, so that would be the initialization of the algorithm. Now I need to make the updates. So what do you think I need to make the updates? It's something you've seen in all your pseudocode, in a lot of pseudocode for the algorithms and data structure. I know because I tutor some of you, so. Okay, so I need to repeat something. What do I use when I need to repeat something? What would you use? Come on, you write code, guys. I have to repeat something until something happens, okay? Yes, so what would I use? For? While, yeah, while. While is a good thing. So what I want to use is, I could also use some sort of, you know, yeah, I could always, a while is what I want, really. Because what I want is to keep updating until the position of the centers doesn't change. So, equals, let's say, so I initialize the variable on which I'm going to check whether I'm changing, distance between the centers between updated and previous, to 1, 1, and then I'll basically write my while loop, while min, let's say, greater than 1 × 10⁻⁶, although it would probably get exactly to 0. So I'm going to check. I'm going to update the position of the centers, store that into a new variable called, say, centers new, then compute these dist centers as distance between the new centers and the old centers, and check it, basically, okay, in the while loop. Okay, so mean of data, find question.
Yeah. Why do we use minimum of distance centers? Because we might have data point at the center of the cluster that might move a lot, but then there might be another one that's already fixed and it doesn't move a lot, so that gets into the minimum.
Right, but then what that means is that, you know, it's found one cluster, okay, but the other clusters, it's not found them yet. So I want to stop when it's convinced about the position of all these cluster centers. You see, I mean, in the case where you have two, it's not going to happen, because if one doesn't move, the other one doesn't move either. Okay. If you have three, maybe that one gets straight there, but the other two are still going. So I want to keep checking, you know, that all these cluster centers are not moving anymore. And that's when I want to stop, because then it's basically, you know. So if you find that at the next step you have not moved, then you're not going to move anymore, because you keep repeating exactly the same thing, okay? And but I want to find, to be sure. Okay, MATLAB is a parenthesis intensive, but what I need to do, so what I'm doing here is I'm updating the first center by saying find the elements, find the indices of the membership on the first column of the membership matrix that were non-zero. Take the entries of the data matrix, the rows of the data matrix corresponding to those indices, and take the mean of that along the row direction, okay, so that I'm finding the mean. Okay, so do the same for the second one. Notice that I still have a one there because I'm still taking the mean along the row directions. And then I have a center new thingy. And what I want to do now is compute equals okay, I compute the distance between the old center, the old first center and the new first center, and I store it in this center's first entry. And actually that I want it to be something with two entries. And then I've done the same for the other ones. And then what I'm going to do is I'll have to recompute the membership matrix. I'll have to recompute the distances from the new centers. to recompute the distances from the new centers. That I don't need anymore. Yeah, and I've ended the while loop. But that was wrong, because actually at the end there, I need to say that centers becomes centers new. Okay, so what have I done? I've started a while loop. I've updated the position of the centers by making them in the mean of the points that were assigned to them. I've recomputed the distances, so I've computed the variable I'm controlling. If this happens to be zero, then it should break and stop. If it is not zero, it will carry on executing. It will I've recomputed the distance of all the data points from the first new center. And from the second new center, and that's something's gone wrong. Okay. What I didn't want to do was reinitializing the membership matrix, because I don't need to do it anymore, not that it costs a lot. And then I'm doing the same thing. So I'm finding the sign of the difference between these two distances, and I create a new membership matrix. And then I say, okay, the centers now are the new centers. The old centers now are the new centers. And I will while through this. Okay, so let's see. We had executed up the membership matrix. This is something that shouldn't be there, really. Let's see if I can execute this. Before I do that, let's make it plot something at every iteration so that we see that it's working all right. So let's do figure data. Which data do I want? I want this data. Close this. Say Ctrl C. So I'm making it plot, and now I've made a mistake here. I'm making it plot the positions of the data in the first cluster. It's red dots, red crosses. And then I need to do, so let me just see data. So this is taking, is saying, take the rows that correspond to the indices that have a one in the first column and all the columns of those rows. Otherwise, it will get into trouble. It's a bit, it's not totally trivial to code even this online. And then I just say plot these corresponding to the second in a different color, green, okay, and then I also want to plot the new centers. So I did plot the centers. New. Okay, so let's see whether this works. It may not work. I've got it on the slides anyway. Undo whatever I've done. Okay, from here, control C. Okay, so I've made some sort of mistake somewhere. Let's go back to the slides. Because otherwise we won't get... I mean, I hope you find this reasonably useful to see how you go from some algorithm into some sort of implementation directly. If you don't, I mean, it's not a problem. I mean, and of course everyone makes mistakes when he's writing codes. At least I do. So everyone must. but, you know, it's kind of useful to see, I think... Feel free to tell me to the contrary. It's kind of useful to see how you go from something that you describe as an algorithm to something that you plot, you put into MATLAB and generates results and so on. Okay, so this is an example data set. That's an example of how it works on a slide, so something that has been debugged. So you start with some arbitrarily placed means. And then that will give you some assignments. In this case, we have three clusters. And you see these two are assigned to that one. A bunch of them are assigned to this one. Then you update. You get new positions. You get new assignments. Now, the way it has plotted this, if you notice, the thick blue lines are points that have changed membership. So this is a case in point of what you were saying. At the next iteration, this will have remained the same because none of its memberships have changed. But both these two will change because this point has gone from being a member of this to being a member of this.
One argument I was making was that we shouldn't use a minimum. Instead, it's better to use a maximum.
Yes, that's true. I should have used the maximum. So why did you say that? That was a mistake I made. Yeah, that's true. So you should look at the maximum, not the minimum. That's when you're checking for something, be smaller than something. Yeah, I just happened to write thinking about minimizing a function. Okay, see, you go from here, you move slightly these two, but that remains fixed. And then nothing has changed, so you've converged. A different example, you can start here and you're already converged. But if you choose a different initialization, so if you chose to initialize instead of in reasonably arbitrary points, you chose to initialize on actually this data point, you could have converged onto a completely different solution. And that's a major issue. You can find yet another solution from a different initialization. This is what is an example of something that is called a highly multimodal problem. So there are many, many solutions depending on the initialization. And the initialization strategy is something that you should consider. This slide before has got some details about possible commonly used initialization strategies. One strategy is to just initialize from the data. So select at random some data points and choose them as your centers. Another option is to generate cluster assignments randomly and then start your algorithm from that. So in order to start your algorithm, you need to have some starting centers. You can either define them directly or you can define them by an arbitrary cluster assignment. That works. You can be less random in your choices. You can choose the points which have extreme values. So for example, the ones that are furthest apart. Or you can find the mean for the whole data set and perturb them. Each of these strategies works sometimes and doesn't work other times. There isn't a magic bullet for the problem. It just is multimodal, and that's the way it will work. One way in which we can interpret the k-means algorithm is to look at it in terms of something that minimizes a sum of distances. Okay, so if you look at the sensible situations, what you're trying to do, the configurations of these three means is the configuration that minimizes the sum of the distances from the data points to the center to which they are assigned. Okay? So you can write an error function, which is the sum of the distances from data points to corresponding cluster center and minimize with respect to that. K means we'll do the minimization in an iterative fashion, which is probably more advantageous than, say, using a gradient-based method. But once you do that, then you also get this interpretation leads you to a measurement of the error. So the smaller that is, the better you are. And that also allows you to do model selection to some extent. Okay? You could do k-means with three means, and you will get a final optimal value of the error. You can do it with four means. You will get a different one. Can anyone tell me whether the value of the error function with four means will be bigger, smaller, or larger than the error of the function with three means? Sorry? So if I fit a data set with three clusters, I get a certain error function, sum of the distances from the centers. If I fit it with four clusters, what value of the error function will I get? Always smaller. So it is difficult to use these things for model selection in some sense, because it will lead you to think the more clusters, the better. If I had as many clusters as data points, I would get zero error function. Typically, what one would do would perhaps plot the error function as a function of the number of clusters, and you would see that it's very high for one cluster, then comes down, and then kind of levels off, tending to zero. And then you may be tempted to say, okay, this is the best. And that's one solution towards the model selection problem that was mentioned before. Okay, so this is an example where you work out explicitly the error function. And this is another example. And actually, in this case, you have a higher error function for that clustering than for this clustering. And that's not bad at all in some sense. Okay, this gives you some evidence that with the same number of clusters, you get a better clustering in that way, although it may seem counterintuitive. Part of the reason is that one of the contributions has gone straight to zero. And that's having points that collide on, centers that collide on points is always a dangerous thing. As I said, technically what happens is that there are different local minima of the error function. So the profile of the error function, I'll attempt a 3D plot. The profile of the error function, as say the position of one cluster center, is something that looks like this. Okay. So when you do any optimization, you could end up here and think you are at an optimal value of the error function, but actually you have no way of knowing that if you go here, you'll find a better value, which is actually lower. This is something that will become a concept if you go into machine learning in the rest of your education, you work a lot on the idea of multiple modes and so on. At the moment, the take-home message illustrated by the examples is that different initializations for the same algorithm can lead to different solutions. And the technical reason is that. Okay? So, just to sum up, we've looked into k-means clustering. We have defined an algorithm. It's an iterative algorithm. We've also looked at a prototype wrong implementation with a bug, but I'm sure that could be fixed very easily. And we've defined different types of clustering. Now, one question that I would like to pose to my algorithmic friends here is, if you have hierarchical clustering, agglomerative clustering versus partitional clustering, take it home and think, what is the computational complexity in terms of the number of data points? So which big O is this algorithm, and which big O is this algorithm? Okay? You can tell me on Friday. I'll tell you on Friday if you want as well. But Friday we'll move on to supervised learning clustering. It works now.
But it's not plotting things. Why is it not plotting? Ah, because I was already in the maximum. Sorry?
Can you show?
Well, it's not giving any errors anymore. So I was already probably it. The reason it went in the first iteration to here, and it stopped here. So if I do this,